and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 445. My name's James Gilmore, and I started that with higher energy than I intended. That's me expelled for the day. Everything will be monotonous and quite tired sounding from here on out. But bringing up the mood significantly is Rick Cowley.
Hey, woo!
That's what I'm talking about.
There you go. There's your energy back.
You're going to be the hype man for today.
Oh, God. I've never been a hype man in my life.
Yeah, I know. Getting excited about things. Who would even bother? No Em this week. She's on a half day. Where does she think she's going, by the way, stepping out on us?
I have no idea. I can't believe this betrayal that I fully sanctioned.
Yeah, you shot yourself in the foot there, didn't you, mate?
I did, yeah.
You betrayed not just yourself, but also the podcast and all the listeners. So everyone blame Rick. Oh, it was a pause for me to allow you to silently blame Rick in your head. Ah, good. Now that that's out of the way, what have we got going on for you this week? Well, last week we had a little bit of the start of E3. We had a little shade of Microsoft kicking in, but none of the other big talks and conferences bits have been done yet. So now it's kind of over-ish. We look back on the likes of Nintendo's, which is probably the one that affects us the most. Lots of stuff coming to Switch. A little bit from Sony and Fortnite, and oh, it's all going off. Sony have been bad people. We've got a whole bunch of new releases for this week, including Dinosaur Survival Hunty House Building Thing. Ark Survival Evolved. We got Bloons TD6. You got an interview with the creators of Boom Ball 3, the Kinect game, which has now been pulled over onto touchscreens for your ball lobbing pleasure. But first, it's the news. Seems like every week we're talking about Fortnite in one form or another. This one is happy news with a tiny tinge of sadness if you happen to have played it on PS4 first. It came out on Switch. They did one of those, hey, we've announced Fortnite for the Switch, and it's out right now, woo, kind of announcements, which is always fun when they do that. And Switch users did rejoice. We're going to do the sort of proper review thing later, because you've played it a bunch and we've reviewed it for the site. But The controversy that popped up this week was delighted people who own Switches and other consoles picking up their Switches, downloading Fortnite, being brilliant. I can play this on the go. People who didn't like maybe the touchscreen controls on iOS were like, well, now I've got proper controllers with the Joy-Cons. This is going to be great. I'm just going to log in with my PS4 account. And then they weren't allowed to do that. Turns out, if you've played Fortnite on PS4, it locks you out of playing it on Switch.
It's the stupidest thing.
The reverse is also true. So if you've played it on Switch, if you like start your account on Switch and then try and play it on PS4, you also can't do that.
Huh.
Yeah. So it goes both ways. Up until now, it's been cross-platform on most platforms. So PC, iOS, Android, they've all been cross-platforming. You can play with everything, and it doesn't matter which account you created where. I don't know about Xbox.
It's on Xbox, yeah.
It is, and so presumably...
Yeah, that's cross-platform as well.
No complaints from anyone so far. It's just this Switch thing that's thrown a spanner in the works. And the Xbox accounts, they work on Switch, no problem, as does the iOS and everything else. It's just Sony. This has caused fury.
To put it mildly.
Just going to say it. People are raging online. And have you seen Sony's response to this?
I believe the gist of it is they shrugged their shoulders and went, oh, well.
Yeah, kind of. So they didn't say anything for like 2 days. And then they released a statement. And the statement is a complete, like, non-statement. So they said to the BBC, with more than 80 million monthly active users on PlayStation Network, we've built a huge community of gamers who can play Fortnite together and all online titles. Which has nothing to do with why Fortnite it can't be played on Switch if you played it on a PlayStation. They do continue. We also offer Fortnite cross-play support with PC, Mac, iOS, and Android devices, expanding the opportunity for Fortnite fans on PS4 to play with even more gamers on other platforms. We have nothing further to add beyond this at this point. So that's basically them completely avoiding the issue.
That is just the worst non-apology ever. It's just a fantastic bit of, we don't care. We've got enough people. We don't need more.
Yeah, kind of. Now, it's obviously a conscious decision. This isn't like a little fault that they've discovered. You know, that everyone's very smart who's doing this. This is a very deliberate choice where we're going to support PC crossplay, Mac crossplay, iOS crossplay, Android crossplay, but not Switch. We are consciously not letting you anywhere near stuff on Nintendo specifically. And I understand, for example, if they were like, right, no cross-platform with Xbox, which incidentally they don't list on this. But I'm wondering if that's just not, like, mentioning the competitor, the main competitor, you know?
I don't think you can do cross-platform with Xbox on PS4, because that's where the main, I think, sticking point is.
Oh.
I don't know why, but in a lot of games, you can do cross-platform on Switch with Xbox on Rocket League. You can definitely do it on Minecraft as well, or you will be able to. But obviously that's because Microsoft owns Minecraft at this point. If Nintendo had sort of gone to Sony and said, hey, we'd love to do cross-platform with you, they would have been, okay, but we won't do it with Xbox.
No.
It's just this weird thing that Sony refuses to open up the platform and their online platform to other companies.
And it's something that Xbox dudes, like the Xbox chief, has said, like, we're up for it. Like, we're up for cross-play with PS4. Mm. Which, frankly, given the install numbers for PS4 and Xbox, isn't surprising, because there's more PS4s in the wild than there are Xboxes.
Yeah.
So it perhaps benefits them more than it does Sony, whereas Sony's very much like, nope, we're doing a full, like, Apple-style walled garden here, get knotted, Xbox. And they are also doing the same thing with Switch, which, notably, Xbox One hasn't done.
Mm.
The thing of it is, right, I understand the isolation of online play, multiplayer style. If they're going to say, like, right, we're not going to let you play your account with people playing on the Switch, for example,
yeah,
or people playing on the Xbox, I get that. But when it comes to accounts and where they can be used, that's the thing that seems like a dick move, because everything's multi-platform now. Like Hearthstone, you know, you have a Hearthstone account, and then you play it on PC, and then when it gets released on iPad, you bring that account over onto the iPad, and you carry on playing, and you can switch between both. And that's what people do a lot now. More and more, it's about the account doesn't live on a console. The account lives in the cloud. The account lives with the company, with the game, with the identification. It's just a marker to tell you this is my stuff and this is what I've got in the game. And then that gets beamed out to whatever console you're playing it on. So being like, nope, you can't even access your account. You have to create a whole new one for Switch. That's... I can understand why people are genuinely hacked off with that.
Yep.
I think
Absolutely.
People have come to expect it if they are Hearthstone players or Magic the Gathering or any other game where you can just open up your account on it. Like, they don't even have to let you play with Switch players or vice versa. If you're playing on PS4 and it says, nope, we can't match you with Switch players, I get that. But the idea of you can't even open, it won't recognize your account login credentials anymore, that just feels a bit anti, and I'm not one of these people who bangs on about anti-consumer or anti-gamer, because it's kind of a nauseating entitlement argument nowadays, but that does feel a little bit like, oh, really?
Mm.
And the other thing is, people didn't know.
Yeah.
If it was a tacit agreement you made when you signed up, and so you might have invested a lot of time in Fortnite on PS4, perhaps, and spent a lot of money, because it's a free-to-play game, so yep, you might have chucked a bunch of cash into this and never been aware that you wouldn't be able to access it from other platforms.
I had actually had this problem because when the Battle Royale mode first launched on PS4, I downloaded it on that the day it launched and made my account and signed up for it and played it for two games and thought, this isn't for me, and threw it away. And then when I picked it up again on Switch, I ran into that problem. It's like, oh no, you do have to create a new account. It's like, I did that before I even knew I was, like, setting up an Epic Games account. I did this before it was even a big game. It was just a thing that happened. And to be fair, setting up a new account wasn't too difficult, and I hadn't put any money or time into the game. But you're right, like, people who have and then just want to go, well, now I want to play it on Switch, it's completely locked that off for people.
Yeah.
I hadn't considered that, and now I can understand why people are so angry.
Are all furious. I mean, this statement reads like, we're not going to address it, we're going to say nothing, we're going to wait and see what happens, and whether people kind of forget about it. Because that's the kind of, like, we're not acknowledging it, we're not even mentioning the word Switch, we're just going to be like, we play games and some of those games are online. Okay? Everyone's going, what? What? Answer the question, you pricks. But I reckon they're just going to, like, wait it out and sweat it out. And if the backlash is huge enough, maybe they'll have to address it. But it'll probably just ebb away after a week or two. And then yep. they can just carry on and ignore it and pretend it never happened.
Good times.
This is one of those ones where you feel like Sony can, to some degree, do what it likes because ultimately the PS4 kind of won this generation.
Yeah.
And it has the bigger player base, and Xbox is still, whilst not a flop or anything, because all the naysaying about the Xbox is a little bit exaggerated, but, you know, they did lose this one, and they are playing catch-up a bit with the Xbox One X and the S and all that. And so they're like, yeah, of course, we'll play with anyone at this stage. And Sony's like, no. But we'll tell you about Fortnite itself on Switch in a bit, because you've been playing it a lot, Rick. And you know things, and I don't. Sticking with E3 announcements, one of the interesting things that I only realized the full implications of this was Stranger Things game has been announced by Telltale. That in and of itself isn't particularly surprising, because they've turned plenty of, you know, hot properties and movies and TV shows into the games. So the fact that they're jumping on Stranger Things, I mean, they did Game of Thrones, Guardians of the Galaxy, blah, blah, blah. So this is not a shock. Stranger Things game, I imagine they could probably do that quite well.
Yeah.
The more interesting news is they seem to have done like a trade-off with Netflix, although I'm sure this isn't how it worked. So Netflix has given them Stranger Things, while Telltale have given Netflix the Minecraft game. So they're going to be bringing Minecraft Story Mode to Netflix as an interactive adventure.
Yep.
So they're porting the game onto a TV streaming service.
To be fair, not actually a hugely surprising move, because Netflix has already experimented with interactive things on their service.
Have they?
There's already a Puss in Boots Choose Your Own Adventure.
Okay.
And they did a similar one with a lesser-known franchise called Buddy Thunderstruck.
Right, I didn't know that.
They're both actually quite good. I've played both of them, and they are enjoyable, and then you can go back. But they just offered sort of binary choices, so you either did this or did this, and it would then jump to a different scene. And it was just sort of a collection of scenes. And it was they were all written so that there was no sort of follow-on from anything. It wasn't like the traditional Telltale, you know, Clem will remember that sort of thing. It was just sort of, it all led to the same conclusion. But yeah, they have tried it before, and apparently it's done really well. So they were, I think that they came out probably last year, and Netflix has kind of been sitting on that and thinking what to do. And then obviously they've gone to Telltale, and Telltale have said, yeah, we can make it for Netflix instead.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, with the Minecraft games, they do render those games in real time. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. So when you're playing those games, there is an engine building the scene on the fly rather than it being pre-rendered stuff. But there's no reason, really, with those Telltale games in a lot of cases, apart from, like, the walking around bits you have to do with Walking Dead or something like that, why they couldn't, for the most part, just be cutscenes. And then, you know, they do their banter, and then you choose how to reply, and then it activates the next cutscene, and it becomes like an FMV-style choose-your-own-adventure.
Mm.
Which is, I presume, how they're going to do this. I don't know if Netflix is planning to actually run an engine at the other end and then stream the results to you, like playing with PlayStation Now or something like that. I don't know if that's how they're doing it.
That would be mad. No, I think you're probably right. I think it will be like a full conversion into a sort of series of cutscenes that you choose between.
Yeah,
and there's no reason they can't do that, because particularly in more recent games, Telltale have way cut back on how much interactivity you actually have and how much walking around there is. And I think Minecraft Story Mode is particularly one of the games that was just like stripped back to its bare minimum of choices and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So it's totally doable.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they do it that way or if they try it some other way. And Minecraft's a genius first move, because that'll get all the kids in.
Totally. And I read somewhere, I think at some point, they when they were being asked about this, Netflix, they were like, yeah, we've got no interest in games. We're not, this isn't our first step into gaming. I think I read somewhere. And it's like, Yes, it is, dude. That's exactly what it is. You've just taken steps. I mean, and you're saying they did it last year as well. This is the TV platform's first step into gaming.
Mm.
And given the subscriber base for it, and as with all these things, this is why mobile gaming has become so prevalent nowadays. It's just because the devices are ubiquitous. Everybody's got them. And most people have got a Netflix account. And if you can run it on any device that runs Netflix, which again, if it's just a bunch of pre-rendered scenes, that immediately means you can play it on any PC, any phone, any television with a remote control, because you just got the arrow buttons presumably on your remote, and you're just like, you know, I'll choose option 3 or option 4 or whatever, and that's it. Makes total sense, and this could be the start of something interesting for them.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if they have a launch date for it. They haven't given us any information, but we just know that it is coming. There's also, we got the first footage of Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, which has Emily slightly concerned, because she was the one covering all the Switch stuff, being that it looks nice, and you can, you know, use your Joy-Cons to throw Pokeballs and all that kind of business, which will be fun. I think she thought the battles looked a little bit on the sort of simple side, Pokemon Go-ish, rather than proper OG Pokemon, so I think she's a little bit like, But it could be good. It's pretty. We've got the videos up there on PG where you can go and have a look and see what happened. There was the Fire Emblem Switch game, which has now been revealed as Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yeah.
You can see mostly cutscenes, to be fair. It's mostly lots of pretty anime. But there is some actual violence going on where it looks like vast armies and, you know, it's Fire Emblem. You've got the ability to take control of hero characters while big army battles go on and tactics and all that business.
I think armies are actually new.
Is that new?
Yeah.
Previously, I know it was like tile-based stuff, wasn't it?
Previously, you've got sort of your own sort of squad of heroes.
Yeah.
But this looks to be the first time when your heroes also have, like, smaller units that act as an army kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So that is a... the armies kind of thing is kind of new. I'm sure I saw that on Twitter. I've never played Fire Emblem, but right. I believe that is a new entry.
Okay.
So it is kind of cool, and it's going to be bigger battles and everything like that, which is interesting.
Becomes more of a classic strategy game where you've got the little troops running around like in a StarCraft or a Command & Conquer, which also got revealed, incidentally. Command & Conquer Rivals, which is now in pre-alpha access. You have to be in the States in order to get it, unfortunately. But that came out to a chorus of downvotes on YouTube. Everybody furious because it's on mobile and people don't like that.
Yep.
I've already signed up for it, but I haven't been able to go hands-on with it yet. And I think I might try and region hack it or something. But we've obviously got the big collection of announcements. So many stories. Em and everyone else on news has knocked out of the park this week. So just check with PG and it's just full of constant flow of E3 news and excitement. So go and have a look at it. It's good. Promise. Smashing balls into objects has been a mainstay of gaming since Pong, basically, back in the early days. I'm joined today by Aki from Virtual Air Guitar, who's created Boom Ball 3, the latest in the Boom Ball series of ping pong style games, though I would arguably say squash for reasons I'll go into later. This was originally created for Kinect style controllers, where you're literally kind of waving your arms in the air and using that to control the actions within the game. But now you've brought Boom Ball 3 over onto a touchscreen and you're here to tell us about it today. Aki, thank you for joining me.
Hi there.
You were designing these games originally for use with Kinect. In the case of Boom Ball 3, it plays like it's described as a ping pong style game, but, you know, volleyball or squash or whatever you want to call it. You're hitting a ball, effectively, at bricks in the classic kind of Arkanoid style. And then it's bouncing off of a 3D space, so it's almost as if you're standing in a squash court and the ball will bounce off the walls and the ceiling and come back to you, and you have to keep repelling it back to smash the blocks to bits until there are no blocks left. I imagine one of the big tricks to overcome here is, A, making sure that the arm gestures that you're making line up with the in-game action, and B, the problem of a lack of physical feedback. How do you deal with those two things? What were the struggles you faced when making the game originally?
So with the original Kinect version of the game, our design goal was to keep the player in motion at all times, keep the movements natural. There's nothing worse than a Kinect game where you have to keep your hands still for a long period of time. That's really bad for ergonomics. So right. Game like tennis or ping pong, where you swing your arms around, that's a natural motion that you can keep doing for a while. One of the challenges was, of course, that we needed to ensure that the game supports players of all heights. You can have kids and grown-ups playing. So everything is relative to the player's height. So that
right.
even if you're just 1 meter tall or 2 meters tall, you can still reach up to the top of the level without any problems.
Gotcha.
And we also needed to ensure that the player will want to move around in their living room. So we usually keep the sideways motion so that you can step left and right while still being able to play normally.
And what about sort of physical feedback? So with most control systems, even a touchscreen, you can attack something. You can press a button. You can put your hand against a physical object and it will stop you mid-flight. Whereas with a game that's based around Kinect, obviously you are never going to encounter that sense of physical feedback. Is that something that's tricky, or does it actually not matter and basically your intuition takes over and you just, you know, hit the air and your brain makes the connection that, yes, I am hitting this ball, it's fine, don't worry if I can't feel it?
That's a very good question, because there's a trick to it. You have to design things that don't require that physical contact. So you don't want to design stuff where you would have to grab something or stop your movement. Mm-hmm. Instead, we design around it by rewarding the player for big motions. So whenever you swing your hand, the harder you swing, the bigger sound effects will be, the bigger the explosions will be, so that it is satisfying to make those big motions. So those explosions and bounces and sound effects, those are the feedback that are in place of actually hitting something physically.
Right, okay. So you kind of heighten the other senses, if you like, the visual and audio feedback, to compensate for the lack of physical feedback.
Yes.
Well, when you're bringing it over onto a touchscreen, which is what you've done with Boom Ball 3, you are suddenly faced again with a completely different control system. Obviously, there's no full body motion. There's no moving around the room. You're just dealing with your thumb or two thumbs, perhaps, on a much smaller screen with actual physical feedback. How are you able to turn 3D gestures into 2D taps effectively?
I think here we were aided by the fact that Boom Ball's gameplay is very universal. It's about bouncing balls, and there's more than one way to bounce balls.
Hmm.
You can do it with like a tennis racket or something like the paddle in Breakout, or you can do it by tapping the ball on the screen. And since the balls are flying towards you in the game, when the ball arrives, you can swipe it to give it direction. You can aim it left or right or up and down by making a swiping motion as the ball comes, just like you were swinging a paddle or a racket. No matter what platform we're on, we'll always try to focus on making the gameplay interesting by using physics and using very accurate, intuitive controls. So we want the player to be able to make decisions all the time. This is not a strategy game where you make your decisions and then watch the game play out. It's rather more of an action game where you're constantly reacting to what's happening in the game. Every second there's something happening, a ball coming towards you that you need to hit back, or in the case of multiballs, which I think is an absolute hoot when you have 10 multiballs flying this way and that on screen, you really have to focus on tapping everything in the correct order and still aim at the blocks you want to break.
Ball games or bouncing games or things like Peggle or Bubble Witch Saga or anything like that, that's kind of mobile's bread and butter to some degree. So suddenly there's an awful lot of competition in this particular genre. How do you feel Boom Ball sort of stands out amongst the rest of them?
Well, Boom Ball has like three main features that I hope make it stand out from other ball bouncing games. Mm-hmm. One is the control mechanics itself. I don't think I remember seeing any other game where you control the ball from a first-person perspective, like you were playing a tennis game yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have these fun little cubic creatures. We have blocky sheep, we have explosive hamburgers, we have snakes, and I don't think we have ladders, but we do have snakes and scorpions and parrots and monkeys and even aliens and UFOs. And all of these are constructed from little cute cubes with faces on them. So there's definitely kind of humorous aesthetic that you don't see. And of course, you get to blow everything up with beautiful explosions and reactive physics. It makes it really satisfying when you explode that blueberry pie and it flies into hundreds of little chunks.
I think it is, from my playthrough of it, the red blocks are the most satisfying thing that you're aiming for, where in amongst the little creature designs, they're all made up of little cubes, but there'll be a few red ones dotted around which are explosive, and when you do hit them and the whole thing shatters in 3D, again, you're talking about visual and audio feedback. That's quite good feedback. That always feels quite nice.
Yeah.
And there's also the issue of pricing. So you've got the fact that lots of games are obviously free-to-play now. You've come from a premium marketplace over onto what is swiftly becoming a free-to-play dominated landscape. You're sticking with a premium price point for this game. I know it hasn't necessarily been set at the price point, but what do you think about that in terms of the challenges? How much research did you do on the whole mobile gaming landscape? Are you very familiar with the App Store and Google Play? Are you mobile gamers and so you know the lay of the land, or is this something that's kind of new for you guys?
Well, we have done our research, but I don't think I've played through all of the 5 million apps on the App Store, so there's a lot of stuff there, yes. Yeah. And I hope that we're able to stand out by bringing an actual old-school console experience to mobile devices. So, of course, there's great graphics and 3D, but we're also doing this in a totally premium way. You buy the game once. There's no in-app purchases, no tracking. We don't collect any information or sell it to anyone. You don't even need to be connected online while you're playing the game. So it's just like an actual console experience. Just buy the game once and enjoy it.
The games that were also available on Kinect, all of them are based around physical activity, and that's kind of the point. And when you are jumping around your living room, looking a bit nuts, but hopefully having a whale of a time, that is quite a, as you say, a physical experience, much more so than perhaps just a straight cerebral one that you might get from a puzzle game. When you take that away and you bring it down to just two thumbs, were you concerned that it would lose something in the transition? When you're losing that kind of full body exercise part of the gameplay and you're taking it down to two thumbs, were you worried that like maybe this won't feel so good?
Yes, we were extremely worried. That was one of the first things that crossed our minds when we started designing this. We thought about, can we make this work on a mobile device? What needs to be unique to the mobile platform to make the game a fun experience?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that we found that's common to both platforms is speed. The absolute kind of turbo mode where you're reacting without having time to think. We're just intuitively tapping the balls as fast as you can.
Mm.
And luckily, we have a lot of multi-ball bonuses in the game, so that happens quite often. So it's really exhilarating to be able to just go with the flow of the game. And that's carried over really well, despite the fact that you're losing those hand motions of playing a tennis game. It's not a tennis game anymore, but it's still a game about bouncing balls and exploding stuff and looking at silly cubic animals like sheep and whatever. And the thing that we didn't have in the Kinect version was the instant reaction. You're able to move your finger a lot faster than you can swing your hands.
Yes.
So we've been able to actually make the game even faster.
So what I'm interested in now is, because Kinect has seen something of a decline, initially Microsoft pushed it very hard and it was bundled with every console of the Xbox One that was sold, but over time, they've kind of stepped away from it a little bit and, you know, it's no longer included and it's become left a little bit by the wayside. So when it comes to this kind of design, obviously you've invested time in designing games that work with these types of control systems, these kind of 3D space whole body control systems. With VR still being used, VR still being pushed, I mean, I don't think it's taken off in the way that everyone perhaps hoped it would, but it's still out there. And, you know, I've got the Oculus Rift over here, which is something I've been loaned by a friend of mine that I've been playing and actually really enjoying recently, using those Half Moon controllers and the 3D control systems. Have you considered, right, if Kinect's no longer a viable platform, are you looking at things like both the home PC Oculus Vive style VR and the mobile VR? Because obviously you've got Google Daydream and you've got Samsung Gear VR and all the other mobile VR alternatives as well. Has that interested you guys at all?
VR is interesting, yes. in an academic sense, at least. Before I was part of the company, 12 years ago, I was a researcher of virtual reality, the previous generation of virtual reality the Helsinki University of Technology. So it definitely interests me personally. It doesn't interest our company at the moment, but, you know, things can always change. We're keeping our ear to the ground, seeing what happens. I don't think that there's a great slot for indie VR games right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you never know. Something interesting might happen.
With Boomball 3 now out on the App Store at the minute, I mean, which you can obviously go and grab, is it a case of now focusing on either updates for this game and troubleshooting any issues that come back, or do you already have another project in mind, and will it be mobile-focused, do you think, or Switch-focused?
Well, we're currently engaged in two other projects. One of them is on Nintendo Switch. The other is something I can't speak of right now, but it hopefully has something to do with Kinect. And we're also exploring other opportunities, and we're going to see how Boomball's iPhone version takes off. We might see some major updates there, or we might take another one of our previous games and start porting that to the mobile platform as well.
Excellent. All right. And well, best of luck with the launch of Boomball 3. I hope it's gone well for you guys, and we look forward to seeing what you do next.
Thank you. It was nice chatting with you.
Out and about this week, I'm going to start with Fortnite. Let's do Fortnite. You've been playing it on your Switch, and how do it feel?
It feels really good. Like, as I was saying earlier, I played it the very first day it launched on PS4. And obviously, the very first day it launched, it was awful. It was buggy, and it was slow, and it lagged all the time, and they hadn't really come up with many weapons and stuff like that at the time, and it hadn't received all these constant updates that they're doing. So when I played it, it was really bare bones, and I hated it, and I deleted it instantly, and I was like, I'm never going back to this. I don't understand the hype.
So now, this was back when you did it on PS4?
This is on PS4, yeah.
Right, yeah.
And then fast forward for like 8 months. It's been less than a year, I think, since the game came out first. And obviously they've really stuck at it and kept it going and fixed all the bugs and all this kind of thing. And now it's on Switch, and I thought, okay, I'll give it another go. And it is night and day, the difference. Like, it's infinitely better than when it first was. So if anybody's listening and they had a similar experience and hated it with the very first day it launched, it is really, really good, actually. I don't like multiplayer games, but I'm really into this. I don't understand why. But yeah, so, you know, it's the typical thing. 100 people drop onto an island. You can pick where you want to land by just sort of flying towards it. And then you've got to find a gun and survive and be the best person and just survive to the end and not get shot.
The difference between PUBG and this being that you can, as well as shooting stuff, you can also craft things, buildings.
You can build, like, small buildings and stuff. But you don't have to. That usually comes into play sort of later on in the game when this few surviving people have all built these massive structures, and I'm just there like, I don't remember how to switch to my structures building yet, so I'm just going to stick to my gun. But yeah, there's loads to find now. If you just walk into a building, there's like chests filled with stuff, like full of loot, and every single battle is really tense because you're just like, if I die here, that's it, and I have to start all over again. And, like, you can just die within one shot. If someone catches you with a sniper rifle from 100 meters away, that's it, you're gone. And you'll never have seen it coming. But it's really quick-paced. The load times are very small. There's always people playing it, so you're always thrown into a match really quickly. It does have the cross-platform play with Xbox and so on, so you can, you know, you're always in a match with other people. It's just really good. It's just a really tight experience, and it feels great on the Joy-Con and everything like that. It just works. Like, straight out of the box, I haven't had to change any settings. I'm really enamored with it, and I never thought I would be.
And no hassle with the Wi-Fi or anything like that on the Switch?
No, a few bits of lag every now and then. You'll just see the game sort of skip, but it never it's never affected me in, like, a fight or anything like that. I've never had a problem with that.
Okay.
It just works.
All right, and so another review for Fortnite. We already covered it on iOS and everything, but we got to do our due diligence and quality control. But yes, it's another similar recommendation. Works nicely. Probably nice to have the real controls, analog sticks and whatnot.
And it's free. And you can't go wrong. Free.
No, it doesn't knock you out or anything. Very nice. Another game that's been pulled over from consoles and PC over onto mobile, in this case, Ark Survival Evolved is probably the big release for iOS. Not a lot of releases this week on mobile of note, probably because of E3. Everyone's announcing things rather than releasing things. So this is the game that I've always seen on the PS4 online menu and never bothered to look at because it looked like free-to-play Blair. But I think it actually costs money. I don't know if it costs money on
It does PS4. On console, yeah.
I thought so,
and
yeah.
The mobile version is the first free-to-play version there has been.
Yeah, it was not an expensive game, but it was available. Basically, it's a big old survival game in the mold of all the other survival games that are around. So, yes, you spawn with nothing on a beach, and yes, you run into the forest and start punching trees to get wood, just like you do in real life when you need to make a fire, just punch a tree. And then you kick a rock until bits of flint fly out, and then you build a fire with your now presumably completely mangled limbs. And then you kick a dodo's face off, and you cook that, and then you eat it, beak and all.
Is it dodos?
There's dodos. There are dodos. You have to kill dodos.
You know? Do you know why dodos were hunted to extinction?
Because they were delicious.
No, it's because they weren't delicious.
Oh.
And explorers found no value in them, so they just left them to the dogs, and the dogs hunted them to extinction. Because dodos just didn't taste very nice.
Oh.
So, there you go. There's a fun fact for you.
Well, I guess you need to have a massive lack of empathy with animals, being as for most of this game, you're just like hacking them to bits, like in Far Cry and whatnot. But no, eventually you gain full dominion over the animals. And by animals, I mean dinosaurs. Massive bastard dinosaurs. That's what this game is. So it's the standard survival stuff, only you've got a Triceratops running at you. Survival can be quite tricky. I have played this game like all morning for like over 2 hours, and I've barely done anything, really. Like, yes, I've built my campfire and created some weapons and made myself some clothes and, you know, built myself a hut and whatnot. But beyond that, it's just trying to stay alive, night-day cycle, keep warm, make sure you're always drinking and eating and all the rest of it. And then avoiding it when a velociraptor comes charging at your face, which is where the mobile version struggles a bit, I feel, because when you're being attacked, trying to deal with the combat such as it is, which is basically tap the screen to punch a Triceratops or whatever, that's a little bit fiddly and iffy and makes me yearn for a controller. But what comes later in the game, which I haven't reached yet, is the idea is you want to tame the dinosaurs and you become like the dinosaur whisperer and then take control of them and build up a brood and then start interacting with other tribes of people whom you discover. And that's what it's all about. So it plays out from first-person perspective. It struggles with old tech. I've been playing it on both an iPad Air 2 and iPhone 6S, which is pretty old. And it gets really uppity when you start looking at bits of the island. There are these kind of, because it's sci-fi tinged, there are these large glowing green bolts that come from the sky to highlight special areas. And you go in and there are suddenly areas where it's all this alien tech flying around and my iPhone, bless it, just completely seizes up and has a panic attack. But probably one of the better survival games I have played, because I remember things like Radiation Island and stuff like that. There's plenty of these games on iOS, but it seems a fairly polished one, and the dinosaur aspect is nice, because it's fun to have dinosaurs running around. They haven't become completely tedious yet, although if I did watch the second Jurassic World, I probably would be completely sick of them by now, because screw that reboot and its sequel. But I think we broadly liked it. Harry gave it a 7 and said, you know, bit fiddly, some issues. It's, you know, a huge scope game trying to be compressed down to mobile, and you can sort of see where the tech is struggling with it a bit. But it works surprisingly well, given what it could do, and it's one of the better survival games out there on iOS. And it's free. Free to play. You can obviously buy stuff, equipment, gear, that kind of thing. But you can download it now. Ark Survival Evolved is the name of that one. You've been playing another free-to-play mobile-y thing, but this time it's on the Switch. Paladins, right? Is this free-to-play?
It will be. So they've launched it initially as the Founders Edition, in air quotes, which is £25, but it gives you access to all the heroes and you get everything from like all future updates. You'll get all that stuff as well.
Okay.
So any new champions that get released, you get them. You don't get their skins because they still want to get some money off you. But
yes,
yeah.
Of course.
And then it'll go free to play in the like later this summer.
All right, then. And what actually is it?
So it's basic. It, I hate saying a game is basically another game, but yeah. it is Overwatch. And if you haven't, so it's a team-based shooter, although I think, so this is 5v5, whereas Overwatch 6v6.
Mm-hmm.
You have a team, you have different characteristics of each hero, and then you all run towards a central objective, and you have to move a payload. So it's kind of different, because it's not like attack and defend. It's everybody attacks, and then it switches to attack and defend.
Oh, okay.
Sort of thing. You run to the central objective, you've got to capture the objective, and whichever team gets the objective scores a point, and then can score an additional point, pushing the payload that appears into the enemy base. And mm-hmm. if they don't get that, then the other team scores a point, and then you reset and keep doing it, and it's the first of 4 points. So fairly basic stuff, and there's a team deathmatch mode as well, but no one plays it because it's crap. but the siege mode, as it's called, is definitely the better way forward. And you're kind of playing it this whole time, it's like, it's good. I did have to fiddle with the controls a bit because I felt that the movement was a bit floaty. So mm-hmm. I had to sort of finesse that a little bit. I know it's a tiny minor thing, but there's a thing where you like, when you look around and you're sort of aiming your gun, it does that thing where it starts off really slow and then it like massively speeds up.
Oh,
and
mate.
And you're just suddenly swinging round and seeing the other thing.
I hate the one I had to. I don't usually go in and mess with the shooter settings, right? Because generally I adjust to each of the defaults.
Yes.
Occasionally I will, and you'll tweak the field of view here and there when they'll allow it. But
yeah.
I got Battlefield 1, and it's awful for me. Like, that, it's that the default is terrible for that, where it's like the acceleration on it is so like nothing, whoom! You're like, oh, for God's sake. And I really experimented with it, like pulling the just subtleties. And this is a proper, you know, shooter played by millions. So there must be a lot of people who like this. I found it interminable, like really unresponsive. It was either like just going through treacle, and then you move half a centimeter and suddenly it's 1,000 miles an hour. You know, this is rubbish. So defaulting to just like, however hard you push, that's how fast I want it to go, which is what I want. So I had to just completely slide the sensitivity or the debuffer thing off. And then it was great. And it made total sense.
I couldn't find that in Paladins. There is sort of there's a precision mode, as it's called, but it just sort of delays how long it goes until it accelerates, which is kind of annoying. But, you know, you get used to it and it works. And it is fun to play. It just doesn't have any kind of identity, is the problem.
I've just watched videos, actually, and just even the look is just like very, very Overwatch.
The look of it is Overwatch. The sort of the menu music is Overwatch. It's that sort of down to the grain kind of like how closely it matches Overwatch, but it isn't. And it does introduce kind of MOBA features to it. So you can't change your hero midway through a match, which kind of sucks, because you have to sort of just, when you start, you're given like 35, 40 different characters. You have no idea what these people do. You can look at their skills, but you can't discern how that's going to play in game until you play it. So you can't experiment whilst playing. You just have to sort of pick and go with it. And if you hate your character, then in 15 minutes time when the match ends, you get to pick a new one.
Right.
So that kind of sucks. But I think that's sort of a traditional MOBA sort of thing anyway. And you can have like a loadout of cards that give you different buffs and advantages.
Cards as well.
Yeah. I don't think you can unlock cards. You're just sort of given them all and you can choose your loadout from that in the menus beforehand. It's a bit buggy, it's a bit crashy, it's a bit slow, but if you actually get into a game, it's kind of fun. So I wouldn't recommend the Founders Edition yet and paying the £25, but I would recommend when it comes out, picking it up for free and seeing how you go with it.
So that's Paladins, and that's on the Switch right now for money, but maybe wait. I haven't played it. God of War Mjolnir's Vision came out, which is basically a companion app for God of War. What it really is a map. It's an interactive map, but with AR bells and whistles. So the idea is you point your AR-compatible iPhone or Android device at a table, and then you go boff, and suddenly a map of the entire God of War world appears on your floor, bed, table, toilet seat, wherever you're pointing it at. And it's 3D, and you can move the camera around and look at it and go, ooh, zoom in and out and stuff, and get right up close and look at specific areas that you visit throughout the God of War most recent game. And you tap on them, and it'll bring up information. So you can look at Thalma's corpse, and it'll give you a little narration, which is read by the big floating head guy, whose name I forget. Who's the dude who reads it all? Oh, Mjolnir himself, of course. It's Mjolnir, isn't it? It's basically an interactive glossary. It's not a game in any way. It's just a fun little, ooh, fire it up, walk around it a few times. Nice. And then you probably never use it again. But it's out and it has God of War, so people will download it going, yeah! I predict. So we'll see how the reviews do on that one. Also, Bloons TD, which is the latest in the Bloons Tower Defense game. We're up to number 6 now. And we've reviewed this one. It is starting to show its age a little bit, which Harry's pointed out, like, it does follow the tower defense format through the letter. It's just a very colorful one, where you, but it follows the same thing where, yes, loads and loads and loads of different color balloons come flying in at you and following a path. And then you set up your little dudes to fire and stab and whatever else. And there's some monkeys in it. Monkeys are doing your bidding just to pop balloons. But it's just a bit more of the same. Very bright and colourful and explosions and all that business, but there's nothing new here. It's just, if you played the first ones, you've played this one, so you can get that right now. It's money. I think it's $4.99. It's quite expensive.
It's $7.50 in dollars.
What?
I know.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully they're relying on a hardcore fan base there, I suppose. But you can get that right now on iOS and probably Android too. That'll do it. Thank you all for listening this week. My entire flat smells of smoke, Rick, which has been really disconcerting as I sit here doing this. But my neighbour's burning, I don't know, evidence? I'm not sure, but there's a big bonfire going on next door. And I don't like that feeling when you suddenly go, oh, the flat's burning down. And then go, oh no, it's just my neighbour's flat that is burning down. That's fine.
As long as the fire doesn't catch on your flat, who cares?
The wind's blowing the other way, we're all good.
There you go.
Yeah, so I'm going to go and see if my street is ablaze. Thank you again for listening to this. Come back next week. There will be a final podcast, but I'm going to be off the week afterwards, so there won't be one then. And then, I've just discovered, Rick, I'm going to Vienna the week after that.
Ooh.
Big Indie Fest.
Of course.
Which is a brand new event that we have started at PG, where it's like, you know, we've been doing the big indie pitches. If you listen to the podcast, you probably know what they are. It's an entire event, like, centered around that. So, just basically loads and loads and loads and loads of indie developers turning up, showing us all their stuff, showing each other their stuff, and setting up stands so you can come and play these indie games. And then we open it to the public, which is something we generally don't do with Pocket Gamer Connects, because it's a kind of B2B businessy thing. So you can come, if you're in Vienna, come along and you'll be able to play a whole bunch of the best indie games from around the world, and then even have an impact on how they're developed, because that's what a lot of people do. They show what they've got. Some of it's finished, some of it isn't, and then they get a lot of feedback and stuff like that. But it's just really cool. Come and meet lots of awesome developers, because people who make games are generally kind of rad. But it means maybe a bit of radio silence for a couple of weeks afterwards, but we will always be back, so don't bail. We love you. Please, I'm needy. Legitimize my life.
That's a good way to end the podcast.
I think so too. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.